Counselor by Warfront, as well as Divining Rod, Frisian Fire, and Super 99. Maryland's 5/8 Mile Training Track completes the full service facilities from the Foaling Barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to...
The PA Horse Breeders Association introduces the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Four brand new races to be run at Parks for PA-sired, PA-bred two-year-olds. There are two $100,000 contests on August 22nd, PA Day at the Races. September 24th, PA Derby Day, has two more races, each with a $200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series, yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit PABred.com.
4 career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back at Ocala, at the Ocala Breeder Sales Company. The March sale tomorrow and Wednesday, and we'll talk about the sale in a minute with Graham Motion, but the first order of business, it's just nice to catch up with Graham Motion. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Good to be here.
I reached out last week after the Here Comes the Bride, and with all the pageantry of Fountain of Youth Day that came with it, here was the closing bell, as it were, and Spenderella absolutely left everybody just slack-jawed, maybe including you, the bettors. I mean, she was bet like they had already run the race, and only her second career start off the maiden win. She's a Grade 3 winner.
Yeah, I was a little surprised, to be honest, when she opened up favorite and stayed favorite the whole way through.
Yeah.
Obviously, I liked her, and I felt she should be competitive, but I was a little surprised that the betting public was so keen on her right off the bat.
How keen were you on her? She didn't debut. Her career debut came in February in a maiden mile and a 16th, so obviously the need to go a route of ground. A Caracanti out of an unusual heat mare, that Spanish bunny whose name rings a bell, but talk about when she came your way and developing her and getting her ready to be two for two in two starts.
Yeah, so I mean it's a really strong family. Spanish love affair. It's a sister. So obviously we had high hopes for her, and she'd come to me in the spring last year at Keeneland. We had a few little issues with her. We backed off. I gave her some time. out at Margot Farm in Kentucky. And then when she came back to me, she just did everything very easily. And I actually had her at Tampa, and I decided that she needed to run at Gulfstream. I thought it was selling us short starting her at Tampa. So we ran her at Gulfstream. She won nicely. I kind of wanted to run in the stake because she's a New York bred, and I thought it would be a shame to blow that condition, being a New York bred in Florida, and was pleasantly surprised when she won so comfortably.
Unbelievable. I mentioned Karakontai, and you know, the fact Kip Elser was with us earlier, and Kip brought up the situation involving Saxon Warrior, another, you know, Japanese bred that is making his way as a stallion. And have you had any other Karakontai produce?
You know, I've had a few. I think he's a little underrated as a stallion, or quite a bit underrated. Unfortunately, they're not very commercial for some reason. I'm a little partial to him because obviously Maria Niarchos raised him for Flaxman, who I trained for. He won the Breeders' Cup the same year we won with Main Sequence, also for Maria.
Oh, that's right.
So that was a very special day for all of
us.
Right. At Flaxman. So look, I mean, the horse is impeccably bred. He has all the right credentials to be a really good stallion. I really believe he's underrated. I think the horses perform better on the racetrack than they do in the sales ring.
It's interesting, too, because Spanish Bunny, being by Unusual Heat, who just is you know, think about, obviously, we think about Barry Abrams, and Barry trained Spanish Bunny, but she was a cowbred. But Unusual Heat just offers any kind of contribution to a progeny. There's no telling what boxes get tipped.
Yeah, and Spanish Love Affair, her full sister by Karakontai, was equally as talented. You know, she showed a lot of ability early on. She won the Pebbles at Belmont last year. So the family is very strong.
When you do this kind of thing with a horse, two quick starts, a maiden breaker and then a graded stake, you know, where do you go from here? I mean, you do have the luxury this summer of running her probably at Saratoga against New York breds, but, you know, this is a pretty flashy way to start a career.
So you'll be amused by my instructions to Jose, because I told him just to be patient with her, and hopefully she was good enough to get a piece of it. So the fact that she jumped out there in front and kind of never looked back was pretty darn exciting. But, you know, I think we'll go to Keeneland. They have the graded stake there at Keeneland early on in the meet. I think that makes the most sense.
What, you know, she was a buyback. We should bring in Anthony Beck and Gainsway in here. And what did they tell you, actually? What did Anthony say when this one came their way? Was a $220,000 buyback at Keeneland as a yearling.
Yeah, I believe Wesley actually had bid on this filly and tried to buy her. And then Anthony decided to hang on to her, which I'm very glad he did.
Hmm.
The first thing Anthony mentioned to me after she won the other day was the possibility of going to Ascot, which the only thing that's unusual about that is for somebody to say it before I did. So, oh, look, I think if things worked out at Keeneland, if she continues to do well, and she came out of that race great, I don't think Ascot would be unrealistic. So the Appalachian is the race at Keeneland on the 9th of April, obviously.
The only other kinds of questions I typically ask about a horse like this is distance range. I mean, obviously, when you win a mile, broke the maiden at a mile and a 16th. So it feels like there's range opportunities here. I suppose you focus on the mile for now, but you know, the way she moves and what you see from her, what you know, how far does a filly like this want to go?
You know, I don't know. She's pretty quick. I don't know that she has to be on the lead. I would like to think she doesn't have distance limitations, you know. But for now, I think keeping her at a shorter distance makes sense.
Spenderella
the race at Ascot is a mile. It's a race that we've run in before, so I have a, you know, Sharing ran it, Miss Temple City ran in it, so we've had a little bit of experience. It's a race I feel comfortable running in because it's restricted to fillies, restricted to three-year-old fillies. So I think if you're going to go over there like Wesley does with the two-year-olds, you're better off going with your own age group and often against your own sex.
Speaking of Wesley and Ascot, for those that didn't see it, I think Friday the story came out, or maybe in Saturday, maybe by Saturday, the Lexington police recovered. They caught burglars that had stolen the trophies and the those are what, like snuff boxes, Graham, that you get when you win over there.
Yeah, I've never won over there, so I'm not real familiar with what you get.
But, that was cold. I'm sorry. I didn't mean it that way.
I actually texted Wesley. I mean, he's had a rough go between
the fire and the
robbery and what have you. I mean, he's had a rough go, and I'm glad they were able to get them back, because those things really are special. You know, they're not replaceable.
They had, I guess, had pried the jewelry out of it and so forth, but... at least there's some satisfaction that that they were recovered. Graham, a couple of other before we talk about what's going on here and maybe some rip from today's headline type conversation. There were two other stake runners from the weekend, and I think both, you know, not that Ambitus and Belgrade, there were, you know, big expectations. A little bit more for Ambitus, I think, in a Florida Oaks that was a bit of a mystery, because you had, you know, Chad's Import, and you know somebody was going to emerge out of that group. Talk about what, if you learned anything from Ambitus's try.
Yeah, I mean, I was obviously really disappointed. I really like this filly. I think she's special. She did lose a front shoe, and actually a horse must have reached up and caught her on a hind leg, because she had some scrapes on a hind leg and actually had a nasty grab, which is really unusual on a hind foot. So logic tells me somebody from behind kind of caught her on a hind leg, and Manny did say that at one point on the last turn she kind of lost her hind end. So the combination of that, losing a front shoe, running on soft turf, I think we have enough to go on to think there was an excuse, because I was, you know, clearly disappointed with her race. As far as Belgrade goes, I actually thought he ran a credible race. You know, it was a big step up for him. He broke his maiden going three quarters at the fairgrounds. He came back and won the Isle of Lang going 7/8. And then 3 weeks later, we're running in the Tampa Derby, which was why, you know, the Pascarellas bought the horse. We wanted to try and get him on the Derby route. I don't think he disgraced himself at all. I think he can move forward from that race. Hector was really pleased with him. So I think we'll go on to Keeneland. I think we'll probably duck the Bluegrass and maybe go to the Lexington.
All right, take a little bit of an undercurrent and maybe a Preakness Avenue.
Yeah, I mean,
or
look, who knows? I think I'd like to get him to Keeneland. I think I love the fact that he gets 5 weeks, because he only had 3 weeks last time, and then we'll go from there.
Well, going back as well to last few weeks, and I suppose let me bring up a win that we never talked about, and this goes back to February when you sent Arika. You sent her out to California, and she annexed that Sweet Life.
Yeah, I mean, there aren't many opportunities for three-year-old fillies sort of sprinting beyond 5/8, so this seemed like a really good option, and I thought she ran a really good race. The numbers came back a little weak, but I thought Juan Hernandez gave her a great ride. I'm not familiar with him at all. It's the first time he's ridden for me, but what a great ride he gave her. And obviously, you know, when you ship all the way out there in the middle of the winter, it's nice to come back with a win.
How much experience have you had with the downhill course beside this?
You know, I've had enough, I think. You know, we've run on it
a few
significantly.
Times.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a different... I mean, I'm glad they're back to using it. I think it's a great, it's just so much more exciting to watch something different. You know, the longer race is coming down the hill. You know, Main Sequence obviously won off the hill when he won the Breeders' Cup. So,
I had forgotten that. How about that? You stretched him out off the from that to the mile and a half.
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
I'd completely forgotten that.
Yeah. So,
it's a hell of a training job. I love it, Arika, and couple. Well, there's any number that we could. What's next for her, actually? What do you do now off of that?
There's a couple of races at Turfway. Again, there just aren't that many options. Or we could go to the race at Keeneland going a mile.
We just talked about that, actually. And
yeah, so that would be the Appalachian.
Right. And how... how about there were two? There were two from Fountain of Youth Day, including a horse that you know I've got great affection for. That English Bee, the English Channel. Now was he? Now he's a 6 year old.
6 year old, yeah.
How about that?
He's a barn favorite. Love that horse. He's just a hard knocking blue collar horse. He's always around there at the end. It doesn't matter if you run him in a Grade One or a, you know, the stakes at Colonial, which he really likes these firm turf courses like Colonial and Gulfstream.
The kind of hard-baked. They ended up third in the Canadian.
Yeah, I mean, a really solid race. He's run, you know, I think his most recent races, even without winning, have been really good efforts. Probably run him back on Derby Day at Gulfstream.
And that's the Gulfstream Park?
That'd be the Appleton.
Oh, the Appleton. Okay, okay.
And then wait for Colonial.
Well, and Colonial, the big, you know, when you get that big sweeping. Actually, we'll be down there, it looks like. I talked to Jill Byrne Saturday. Jill has her entire Colonial staff, actually, from Outriders to Allison DeLuca. They're all at Tampa, and then they all shift to New Kent. But I think we're going to come for the Colonial Cup that they're going to run.
Interesting. Yeah, they do a great job. I mean, Jill and Allison. Allison's one of my favorites. She's so diligent, so easy to work with as a racing secretary at Tampa and Colonial.
The effort you got as well from a nice placement in the very one, Harakuja.
Yeah, so we could ship her out to California with. You know, they're in the process of trying to decide whether she should be bred this year or keep her running. There's a mile and a quarter race at Santa Anita at the end of March called the Santa Ana Stakes. It's a Grade Three. I just think running her back at Gulfstream on Derby Day is a mile and a half, and I'm not sure she really wants to go a mile and a half. I think a mile and a quarter is probably more her optimum.
The thing that is notable is you've had... really, after kind of a quiet period, it really felt like the pendulum swung and the barn, you know, as far flung, frankly, as the operation is these days, it felt like everybody kind of moved forward together as a team, both back in the Northeast, the horses you've run at Laurel and in New York, and the ones down, you know, through the Southern Pale.
No, I think that's true. I mean, look, we've had a quiet couple of years. We've kind of had a regrouping year. I sold one of my barns at Fair Hill. We used to have two barns at Fair Hill, and we kind of decided to, you know, to narrow down a little bit, not carry quite so many horses, which was a business decision and a personal decision, and try to concentrate on quality over quantity. And I, you know, it's a risky proposition, but I feel like we're starting to see the fruits of it. I think we've got some really nice stock this year. We had some nice two-year-olds. We got an undefeated two-year-old colt, Psydog. We got an undefeated, well, now three-year-old colt. We got an undefeated three-year-old filly in Spenderella. So, no, I'm excited about what the year might bring.
Outstanding. And then, of course, there's what the two-year-old marketplace could portend. We'll talk about that in a minute. I want to, with a couple of minutes, Graham, before we talk about the sale, I do want to ask some overall industry observations. It's been tumultuous, to say the least. You're never shy about offering opinion, and any general thoughts about what some people would identify as a bit of a malaise?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think we continue to be a little bit all over the place in our sport right now. I think I'm very passionate in believing that we need the Horse Racing Integrity Act to go into place. I think that's going to make things better. I think we need national rules to follow. in the country in horse racing, and I think that's going to get us back on track, and I really believe we need it. I think these tumultuous times will be, I think it'll steady the ship once HISA gets into action, if that happens, and I really strongly hope that things fall into place.
What do your clients say?
Because I'm sure you're asked questions. You know, they see whatever it is, letters to the editors and you know, people that they might aspire to or they respect, but you know, the relationship with the trainer is paramount. Yeah, I'm curious. What kind of conversations do you hear?
I think everybody's on board. I mean, obviously, I trained for Stone Farm for Arthur, and obviously Arthur and Stacy are big proponents of HISA. You know, it wouldn't be a surprise that a lot of my clients are involved in that. And you know, I think we need to get things moving in a positive direction. We really have to do things better than we're doing them right now, and I think this will get us there.
Fair enough. Let me ask about your thoughts. I'm curious who might you be buying for, and are do you come to a 2-year-old sale? I mean, you get your share of homebreds, obviously, but you know, do you come with client orders, or you know, with do they give you kind of carte blanche?
Yeah, so last year, for the first time, I started a partnership. We call it the Herringswell Racing Club.
Right, that's right.
We bought 3 horses last year, 2 of them here, I believe. And we're trying to keep that going. It's mostly clients that I'm involved with now that have joined the racing club, and most of them are coming back in to do it again this year.
Nice.
So that's basically what we're looking for. It's a new project for me. It's something I've always wanted to do. One of my owners, Jay Sloan from High Five, has kind of been pushing me to do it, and he's really the brains behind it. He's a financial guy. He used to work for the Redskins. So he's been a huge help to me to get this going, because obviously a lot of the technicalities of it are the financial side of it, which, you know, you want to do it right, and he's been able to do that for me. So I'm excited. I'm here with Jane Buchanan, my racing manager, and we're out looking for some fast 2-year-olds.
When it comes to projecting out of a sale, out of a training sale, the Breeze Up, as they're known internationally, what do you like? And you know, how much of it, you know, how much of the breeze, where, you know, because you don't strike me as somebody that, in fact, we had this discussion with Kip Elser, you don't strike me as somebody who needs a horse to go in 9-4 to project what you've got here potentially.
But at the same time, I think you have to use the information that you're getting here. So I think if we're here to watch horses work, you want to see them go fast, because there's no point in not using all the information that we're getting. And if a horse breezes fast, it's probably going to be able to run fast. So just to keep it very basic, you know, we try to use all the information. I've had Jane's been here all week, and one of my assistants, Ian, has been here watching the works. It's a lot of work. I mean, you've got to sit there for 3 days watching horses breeze, and it can be kind of numbing to the brain a little bit to do that. But, you know, we try to use all the information. I feel like each year we try to be a bit more organized, but it's once the sales start, things happen very quickly, and you cannot be organized enough. So I think that's probably the biggest hurdle.
When it comes to precocious, either precociousness from stallion history, proven sires versus you know, new sires, emergent types. I mean, obviously, when you go through this catalog and you see a Not This Time and the Nyquists, I mean, there's going to be some, you know, some premiums to pay for those. What about looking at new sires and trying to get? Are you worried about maybe getting a bargain or two? Is that part of the approach?
You know, I think like everybody, we're probably looking for a bargain. I mean, we're not buying at the high end. You can come in here and buy at the very high end and buy whatever you like. I think the harder thing to do is probably to come in here and try and find a bargain, try and find a horse that not everybody's on. You know, look, there's some interesting new stallions this year. I think Motown's very interesting, and my guys picked out a lot of Motowns that breezed well.
Nice.
So you're taking a bit of a gamble with a freshman sire like that, but I think that's all part of the risk, and you know, you try and narrow down all the possibilities, I guess. And we bought a Practical Joke last year. I think he's a horse that I really like. Our colt didn't pan out, but I do think it's interesting to see these younger stallions.
When you look at a baby like at this time, and you know, knowing that in some cases, I mean, considering how many two turn stallions and two turn pedigrees we're looking at, and that's why I ask about what you can project from a 10 flat eighth when you may very well be dealing with a pedigree, you know, a horse that's not going to be at his best until next winter, potentially a year from now or even further down the road. Some of it is also looking at a horse physically that, I mean, I happened to look at something that was a May 11th foal. I mean, here's a horse that's really physically young, and so you have to look and project at how that horse is going to change as they grow.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, soundness is obviously one of the biggest factors in these sales. It's so important to do your vet work, find a sound horse. You know, a lot of these pinhooks, they're not from solid families, not from solid producing mares, so you're really buying a racehorse a lot of the times. So there's a lot of I think there's a lot of hurdles to overcome. I think you just got to do your homework, and I don't think you can do enough. And I think as a trainer doing it on your own, there's way too much to do. You need help to do it, because to me, you just can't do it on your own. You can't spend enough time doing it.
Well, and that's true on this end. It's true in the breeding planning and the breeding portion, and when babies are dropped and as they develop, then it's true when they're at the racetrack with you and you've got your team on the shed row, from grooms to hot walkers to foremen to everybody that's involved, vets and holistic treatment agents that come in and work with the horses. I mean, it's never, it's never just a jockey. It's never just a trainer.
It takes a village.
Well, Graham, the tremendous to catch up, and I put some of that planning into practice. Go out there and pick yourself out a nice one.
I need to get to work. Jane's going to wonder what I'm doing.
Exactly. Graham Motion, everybody, always a pleasure. And every time I went to take a picture, you sheepishly turned away. There we go. Now I got one for the
great
listing.
To see you, Steve.
Graham, thank you so much. Graham Motion, everybody, who has just the widespread respect and appreciation of horse players, owners, fellow trainers, and other stakeholders in the game. I appreciate it from Graham, and that gets us to the top of hour three. The morning is flying by, and you, Graham, mentioning Herring Swell. You can go; they've got a beautiful website, much like Kip, let me see here. I want to make sure I've got this right. I'm pretty sure it's HerringSwellStables, right? .com. Let me confirm this through the magic. Yeah, that's exactly right. Herring Swell, two R's, Herring Swell, and you can find out about the racing team that they've put together. I'm just looking to see. Yeah, there's contact information, and of course Graham by his name as well on Twitter. You can always reach out. I'd forgotten that they had put together that Herring Swell. They've had some winners with the blue and the red. I'm going to reach out now, and we'll take this half hour. We'll step away from the sale and from the weekend results. Let's look ahead to Cheltenham. So bear with me as we reach out to. We're going to start with Kev, Kev Humphreys, of course, and we'll start with Kev.
in Singapore, and then go to... All right, we're going to see what happens here. About this is not something we've tried to do before. Well, we're getting a ring though, so I think we may have Kev. Kev. Huh, there we go. I have a little bit of a delay, but here, let me set you up, and we'll talk first to Kev Humphreys about Cheltenham. Hold on, folks. Kev, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are things?
I'm at Ocala at the sale, and we'll certainly get some Cheltenham play in the next few days, but nobody's going to dive into it without hearing from you and from Nick Luck. And Nick will join us in about 10-12 minutes. But I wanted to get you in before it got too late in Singapore. And of course, you'll have your punts out to early in the morning. What? Where do you want to start?
Yeah. Look, it's comes around every year, very quickly into the year, and look, ready to start, and I've been doing quite a bit of research, particularly as the field were finalized yesterday for Tuesday's card, so I think each entries are done 48 hours in advance, so we have the full fields for Tuesday and Wednesday already set up with everything, so absolutely, the real research kind of has kicked in, and ready to go, so happy to. I know I've only a few minutes, so happy to kind of dive straight into it on for tomorrow's card, if that works.
Done. Get at it.
Perfect. So, look, I think, maybe just a quick whistle stop tour through the step race, and I'll pick out kind of where there's opportunities. I think the opening race is supreme. You've got some very strong English form and Irish form there, and I thought it's just like a tanker. Which form do you feel is better? Last year Ireland dominated. They pretty much wiped the floor with GBA winning 23 races. I think Constitution Hill, though, the number two horse, Vicky Henderson, is probably a horse to beat. His form has looked okay. The times, he's been running out quite quick, and I think actually he can follow in the footsteps of Shiskin and Altior, kind of as a very top class supreme novice winner for Henderson. The Arkle is an intriguing race because there's no quite standout star in it, and again, you've got some UK form with Edwardstone, who looked quite solid, if unspectacular, and then you've got Blue Lord and really out to tell from Ireland. I think this could set up for a little bit of an outsider and maybe a sort of deep closer in third parlance. And I'm looking at maybe two outsiders. Number three, of course, Sublime. Who I think will travel very strongly, and I just hope he can get up the hill. But the race should be able to suit a very fast run. Race should be fine. And the number five horse, Gavinaco by Gavin Cromwell. I love the first time tongue tie angle. Gavin Cromwell's horses are coming into form now. He's got form over further. So a lot of this form, if you read it, he's been running over 2.5 miles. This race is over two, but I think a fast run 2 miles will suit, and I hope he's kind of flying up the hill. Third race is kind of the big kind of good quality handicap on the first day. Again, I've picked out two Irish horses here. Number four, Ben Dundee, played by Andrew Lynch and ridden by Danny Mullins, who's kind of a great pilot for the horse. He's has decent shelving score before, and his last one was excellent over 3 miles, and I think this type of race will suit. Number six was Blur, trained by Gord Elliott, I think is another one. He hasn't even missed in the market. I think he's kind of approaching favourites, but every to two I was fancy against the field. Champion Hurdle, I thought it's all about honeysuckle, and I think she'll be odds on. I think I've always tried to beat Honeysuckle every race she's run in. I've lost Honey every single time she's run. So I'm not going to maybe start fighting with her now, but look, it'll be brilliant if she wins, and she's a deserving favourite. I think you can make a good case for Appreciated and Chapu, so number two Appreciated, and number 62 Boo. I think both, if they, you know, they both hit lifetime bets last time out, you know, appreciate pretty much last year, and he hasn't run since. QBU in February, and I think, you know, they need to step forward maybe 3 or 4 pounds, but they can possibly do it. And I think that is, you know, definitely the two to beat. You know, I also think maybe, you know, for people who want to play exotics who maybe want to take his so called, you know, the two horses she's beaten in Leopardstown, Time Raw and Danny are both first time tongue ties, and again might just get a little bit of improvement, and maybe, you know, Danny was beaten 6 lengths by Honeysuckle last time out in the Irish Championship, and maybe that's good enough for second. So at a big price, it would be to consider. The Bears hurdle now is where my kind of each way play today is, and that's the number 4 horse, Indefatigable, trained by Paul Weber and ridden by Single. May 25-1. She did me a massive favour back in 2020, winning the last race of the festival, just getting up on the line, and it was a fantastic win. She always runs really, really well at Cheltenham. She ran 4th in the race last year, behind 3 very solid yard people. And I think, you know, I think it's not quite as good a renewal. It's maybe, of course, at the top of the market, has a lot of potential, but they don't necessarily have it all in the four book, and in the festival comes with very good Cheltenham form. She always runs really well. So I think she's a fantastic price at 20-1+, and she'll be, you know, I hopefully now we can get off to a good start on the Tuesday. The Boodles, you know, this is again an absolute minefield of a race, you know, 22 runners or so, 4-year-olds all trying to, you know, all improve at different knots, rate of speed and so on. I think the two that I probably picked out are number 11 Perry Dancer, Joseph O'Brien's horse is kind of steadily progressing, and Elliot Boris and Agatanbred, who actually they have a good record, actually, Agatanbred horses in this race, and number 5 Ebisari, who I think has run well on debut, kind of had a few kind of so-so runs, ran okay last time out, and again gets the first time tongue tied, and Elliot is a kind of a master, kind of just eating out that little bit more improvement from the tongue tied. The problem with this race is, I think you've got a very heavy favourite with David Warrior, first time up for Mullins, and looks well in at the weight. You know, I think it's 2-1 in a 22-runner race, but we'll try and, you know, if he can get him beaten, it'll be a big score. But I wouldn't be kind of totally against him. And yeah, the 4-miler or the 3-mile 6, kind of a relatively so-so betting rate now at the moment, but only, I think, 600 now, I think, actually, with one taken out. And yeah, I fancy Willie's horse Stafford in that, but I think he's disputing favours of them with one more bet. It'll be a decent watch, but yeah, maybe not much from a betting opportunity perspective.
No. Well, and I'll, for those of you that are trying to jot these down, I've got them written down, and I'll go through them after we talk to Nick. We'll run through, these are tomorrow's races, and we'll probably be able to listen. We certainly got to, you know, get a stretch run in or two on the group ones, and of course day one offers 3 group one events, the champion, actually it starts, of course, with the 2 group ones. The Supreme Novice is a group one, and of course the Arkle. So I will get all these together, and again, Kev in the morning, he'll do his each ways and his, you know, his suggested plays, and they'll be up at our website, and I'll retweet them as well. But there's your Tuesday lineup. What are we doing on Wednesday?
Yeah, so Wednesday again. Wednesday is actually my favorite. When I actually have my favorite race there, I think there's a lot of really, really good races. And Champion Chases is my favorite race of the week. And it's a bumper, I think, is my favorite. Kind of, you know, with all the promising types, it's a great race. So yeah, like entries came out today, and you know, it's interesting enough. I think when we look at the, maybe just to pick out 2 or 3, the Queen Mother itself, so race number 4, going to be a really, really great race watch with Shishkin and Nurgadeen again after their kind of really, really strong race in Ascot, where Shishkin just got the better of Nurgadeen. Most people would suggest that he's going to confirm for with Nurgadeen and win that battle. Shetland will probably suit. Mullins has a second horse in Jackson Francois as a kind of a double fisted in kind of trying to beat Shishkin. I think it's going to be very interesting tactically, but I'm trying to look a little bit away from those, and I think sometimes when you've got three strong ones in the market, one or two of them may disappoint. And I actually think like Newby Negra, the number five horse, he's made 10-1, so he's got a massive price, but I think he's one I'll be kind of playing with each way, and I think I suspect Shishkin will be good enough to win, but I think Newby Negra may get the run of the race and come late and two and nice. Maybe get second, and ideally for me we'll win it. I think just maybe the Coral Cup, which is the third race, again, one of my favourite handicaps, 2.5 race, taking here with a chance. Like, I've probably gone kind of one old bogey to number 7 horse, Colby Lord, who was trained by Nicky Emerson. He's, 2 years ago, he was running in the Champion Hurdle, and he's a 10-1 shot in that. He's 33-1. Now, in a handicap, he's come down the weight quite a bit. He's run over 3 miles and he hasn't quite seen a trip, and coming back to 2.5 miles just looks perfect. And he's got a good race in him, and I think Nicky Emerson is very good at targeting these type of races with kind of the ones that one more big run in him. So I think Colby Lord is kind of one I'm hoping for. I think number 17, and I think again number 6, I think Gordon is going to have a great test. So I think the challenge with both Elliott and Mullins is trying to find the right horse. And I think number 6, Francois, his best run was on quick round, and I think he's primed for another big run as well. I think some of his runs during the winter were trying to just maybe get himself ready for this. So I think he'd be able to turn the table on Ashley Alphard, who kind of ran in the same race as him last time out. So I think there's two, obviously, the other handicap, the Grand Annual 2-miler, which is race 6. The winner last year, Sky Pirate, is actually a relatively decent price, the number 1 horse. He's up in the weight, but he's been running actually against some of the horses who were running in the Queen Mother, and I actually think he likes Sheldon. He's put a record here, and he's only, I think, 4 or 5 pounds higher than last year, so I think he's one to keep an eye on. And as a complete wild card is the number 17 horse, completely mixed by Henry the Brownhead, who had a great festival last year. Again, I think he could be primed for a big run, and he has been running great recently, but has that form, and actually I think for the better ground and this fast one race, he could actually be in the mix for kind of one of the exotics.
Kev, that's the 1650, the Johnny Henderson Grand Annual. I got Capucha Mix, but I didn't get the first one clearly.
The first one was number 1, Sky Pirate.
Sky Pirate. I think that you've gone to Sky Pirate before.
Yeah, sometimes I try and if they've done me a favor, can't be too loyal, but he was very good last year, and I think he's fine. Again, he's running well, so I think, he's got a good shot.
Outstanding. Well, there you go. Tomorrow and Wednesday, Kev will be back on Wednesday, and in fact, maybe we can reprise Kev visiting while he was scoring with your basic 70-1 shot. This is always a favorite at the races listener week, where the chance to just take wild swings, and Kev does the work, so you don't have to, and there's certainly a group of people listening, Kev, that they're just gonna bet along with you blindly. So we appreciate it as always.
So no worries. I have to laugh. So you've got before me, you have Graham Motion, an absolute legend of the game. You have after me now, you have Nick Luck, an absolute legend of the game, and then you've got myself in the middle of that. So look, great, great. company to keep, and thank you for having me. And, you know, I just hope I can provide a winner or two, and we can keep this good streak going.
You don't owe anybody anything. Anybody that's been along with you over the years, there he is, the long shot lad himself, Kev Humphries, everybody, and you follow him at Kev Hum, K-E-V-H-U-M. Kev, we'll talk Wednesday. Good luck tomorrow.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks, all. Chat soon. Bye-bye.
Kev Humphries, everybody. Kev Hum. And that was from Singapore. And not so bad, really, all things considered, right, with the connection. I'm actually pleased the way that came off. Let's try the same stunt with Nick Luck and see if we can't do the same thing with Nick. And... all right. There we go. I'm very pleased that... I mean, listen, Kev is hard to understand when he's sitting right next to you. So, Nick Luck, here he comes, and you got it. Nick...
I've got you.
There we go.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you beautifully. Nice, crisp connection. And, Nick, Cheltenham Week upon us.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely beautiful, beautiful afternoon here in Cheltenham as well. Temperatures probably, I don't know, what would you say, mid-60s, mid to high 60s, not a cloud in the sky. Ground is drying out a little as well, so we should start on sort of perfect racing ground really here. And with a crowd back after we were behind closed doors last year, and yeah, just thoroughly looking forward to it. Can't wait, Steve.
Well, and of course, that's really one of the aspects of Cheltenham, because you've got such an international audience that flocks there, and there'll be a real pent up excitement and demand.
Can you hear me parallel parking? By the way,
is that what you're doing? Are you letting the car do it by itself?
That kind of thing, yeah, right, here we go, I'm done, I'm in.
I love it.
I'm in, yeah. There's no doubt that, you know, it's the atmosphere, the people, the crowd, the massive Irish contingent that come for this event that make it what it is. And, you know, there are no more winners' receptions that are more iconic than the ones that you hear at the Cheltenham Festival, not for the Melbourne Cup, not for the Derby, not for the Derby, not for the Grand National. You don't get a guttural roar like you get at Cheltenham, I don't think anywhere in the world, at least not anywhere I've been. It's an event that has a sort of naturally sort of amphitheatrical quality about it, and has, I mean, it's definitely changed in complexion over the last couple of decades. It's become a much more serious event in terms of a measure of sporting excellence, and it's become a much bigger commercial beast, for sure, and it's definitely got a significantly greater international following, but still it's about spirit and passion and genuine enthusiasm for the sport of horse racing. So, no, looking forward to it.
Well, we're looking forward to some thoughts, and you can basically go wherever you'd like. Some of the highlights, some of the stars, and of course the Gold Cup later in the week. We got a few punts from Kev Humphries, but give us some of your Eddie Keneally coming by. Eddie, have you been to Cheltenham? He has indeed. Eddie Keneally looking very casual in shorts. Nick, he and Owen Hardy just walked in. The Commonwealth well represented. What are the highlights here the early part of the week?
So the early part of the week tomorrow, the highlight is the Champion Hurdle. So that's the biggest hurdle race of the year. That's run over 2 miles for the minimum distance. And there's two courses at Cheltenham, Steve, the old course and the new course. They intersect one another. They broadly look the same or similar if you're watching on the television. But they are actually quite different in terms of the test they present to horses. The old course is a much, much more significant test of speed. It's a little tighter, and the way that the fences and hurdles are situated are slightly different. There are more hurdles in the back end of the race on the old course, where on the new course there are fewer. So the old course is a less of a test of stamina, more of a test of speed as a general rule. So the Champion Medal over 2 miles is a raw test of pace. The undefeated Honeysuckle, 14 for 14. She's defending her title. She's got more on her plate this year than she had last year, there's no doubt about that. And whilst I would not like to say anything negative about her chance particularly, I think from a betting point of view, you have to try and get a beat. And, you know, your heart wants her to win to get the roar that she deserved last year that she couldn't get. But your head says you've got to look for an each-way bet in the race. There's a horse called Chihupo, who I like, trained by Gordon Elliott and ridden by Robbie Power. I have no idea how good this horse is, but he looked outstanding when slamming a decent field last time in Ireland. He's on the upgrade. I think he can run a big race. The other highlights on day one are the big hurdle race, the novices, which a lot of people consider to be the best of its kind for many years. I like a horse here called Constitution Hill, who was very impressive at Sandown earlier in the year. He's got more reputation than form at this stage, but his times have been very good, and he looks to have a bomb-proof temperament for this, so Constitution Hill I like. The Arkle is the big steeplechase over the bigger obstacles for novices. That's a very open race this year. Any number of horses I can see running well. I mean, Edward Stone is a deserving favourite, one of the very few British-trained horses during the course of the festival. That's how one-sided this has become, that will actually start as market leader. There's an Irish trained horse called Gabby Nacko in the race. He's about 25-1 shots. I think he might get a bit of the late action and might finish placed, but I don't approach that race with any great confidence. Wednesday, Steve, then I think the race of the week. We talk about great clashes in sport, great rivalries. Jump racing, the nature of it, the attritional nature of it, means that you don't really get these great rivalries that build up over time necessarily. You're desperate for these horses to keep taking each other on. It happens too rarely these days, but in Shishkin, trained by Nicky Henderson in England, and Energumen, trained by Willie Mullins in Ireland, you've got two absolute Galacticos trained by the two most successful handlers in Cheltenham history, either side of the Irish Sea, and they're rematching after an epic race at Ascot in January. And Shishkin just got the better of Energumen there. I think Energumen, especially if the rain falls on Wednesday as it's expected to, might well exact his revenge. And Willie's stable rider, Paul Townend, who took over from the legendary Ruby Walt when he retired, he has opted to ride Energumen over another very talented horse for the same stable, Chacun or Soir. Also on Wednesday, Willie Mullins saddled his best novice of the week, Sir Gerhard. He'll be devilishly hard to beat in the Ballymore Novices Hurdle. And in the Brown Advisory Novices Chase, it's a very, very good race. But the horse I like here is a horse trained by Manisha Williams in England called L'Empresse, who made a real impression on me when winning at Sandown Park last time out. So that's the first part of the week dealt with.
Let me ask about one race, the Coral Cup, Nick. It seems like, right? It's crazy. The market, there's literally a dozen horses within 10 points of each other.
Well, it's a really tight race. It's a handicap, you know, weights allotted according to horses, officially rated merit. But these handicaps at Cheltenham, see, the competition to get in the races, the handicaps, is so intense. The field almost invariably fill to the maximum in the handicaps anyway, not necessarily in the graded races, but in the handicaps they fill, and you tend to get a much narrower weight band than you used to. So you're talking about a lot of horses very tightly matched of comparable ability. Obviously what you're looking for is the horse who's got a bit up in his or her sleeve, you know, the horse that hasn't shown their full hands to the handicapper, the horse that you know has got a little bit in hand or for whatever reason comes alive at Cheltenham. There's the added complication of trying to handicap Cheltenham as a discrete event. So the British handicappers have to like reframe the weight, taking into account form that's taken place in Ireland, because the two countries operate on entirely separate handicap scales. So that becomes difficult for a punter as well. And you have all the Irish people complaining that the Irish horses are badly handicapped, then they go and win everything, and then the British trainers say, oh, the Irish horses are too well handicapped. So, you know, it is hard picking the winner in these races. I do, however, think I've got the winner of the Coral Cup for you.
Nice.
And I don't think he's a horse trained in Ireland. I think he's a horse trained in Britain called Good Risk At All, who, again, if the weather forecast is right and we get 8 mils of rain Tuesday night into Wednesday, it will be massively in his favour. He absolutely bolted up at Ascot last time, and I don't think that they've given him, you know, enough weight to compensate for his superiority. So I'll be pretty disappointed if he doesn't give a bold showing again.
8-1, it looks like, in the market, and one of literally, let's see, 6 horses that are listed, 8-1, 8-1, 8-1, 10-1, 10, it's crazy. That should be fun. All right, so good risk at all, and there it is. All right, later in the week, Nick, because I know you'll get too busy, but... you know, some thoughts about the Gold Cup and any of Ryan Air and, you know, some of the other standards?
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, listen, the Gold Cup is the race of the week and you know, always should be. I mean, in terms of prestige, it's a really open race this year. There's a lot of horses that I have got an awful lot of time for. I'm a huge fan of Absolute Tar. I'm sure he'll start favourite. He was just touched off by his stablemate Manella Indo last year. They reopposed, as was the third, the previous dual winner Album Photo. So you've got, you know, the winner of the last 3 Gold Cups. You've got last year's runner-up, who just about start favourite. You've got, you know, a couple of horses on the upgrade, like Protectorat and Galvin. It's a really deep race. Yeah, there's probably 9 or 10 horses. I wouldn't be surprised if they won. I think if there isn't too much rain and the ground stays on the quick side and there's an absence of pace in the race, I think that will favour Aplutar. He's the fastest horse in the race. But the question is whether he quite stays the distance. If you're going to ask me that horse to bet at a bigger price, it would probably be Tornado Flyer, who's a horse who's been hiding in plain sight, really. He won the King George prestigious race at Kempton over Christmas. And I think maybe he's just been crying out for this distance all his career. So, yeah, he'd be the one at a bigger price, I think, would be interesting.
Amazing to have Album Photo, you know, back in this race again, who won in 19 and 20.
Yeah, but he hardly runs. I mean, you know, he only ever runs like a couple of times a year. So, yeah, he's got no mileage at all. I just wasn't that impressed with his one run this season at Tremor. So, yeah, I think he's got to take a massive step forward from that. To be, you know, to even run as well as he did last year, and even last year he couldn't beat Aplutar and Manella Indo, so I'm not quite sure how he's going to this time round, but he's trained by a genius, so you never know.
That's, of course, the Cheltenham Gold Cup on Friday. The feature will certainly listen in to, at the very least, the stretch run. Anything for Thursday? Anything for the Ryan Air or the Stayers?
Well, the Ryanair, really, I mean, if Aloho turns up in the same form that he was in last year, the others may as well start now. He's probably the sort of biggest lock of the week. But if he doesn't give of his best, or for whatever reason he's off colour, or he treads on a stone or whatever, then I think Eldorado Allen, who was second in the Arkle last year, could run well. The Stayers Hurdle is an interesting race. A slightly more open look to it. Again, last year's winner, Flooring Porter, he'll be tough to beat, but he's a bit of a headbanger, and he's the sort of horse that he won last year, there was no crowd. He's the sort of horse that could just get lit up by the occasion, and it could compromise him. Wouldn't be surprised to see Champ coming back to form and running a big race in that.
Well, there's some ideas for later in the week. One of the great stands anywhere in the world, Cheltenham, starting tomorrow. And Nick, I did get to nod at you at Gulfstream 2 Saturdays ago to say a very quick hello. What 2 questions? What's your schedule as we get closer to Derby?
Well, it'll be Cheltenham and then Dubai next week for the World Cup. And then we'll push on toward the Grand National. And then I'm taking a week's holiday. I know, it's amazing. And then we'll be gearing up for the Guineas. Very early this year, the 2000 Guineas unusually doesn't clash with the Derby. So look forward to that. And then it'll be on the plane to Louisville.
Excellent. All right. So we'll won't see you till then, but maybe we'll certainly touch base for Aintree. Any impressions? I think the domestic public is having trouble, you know, getting a handle on this 3-year-old crop, which seem right now they seem just okay. They're kind of still waiting for some forward movement from what's supposed to be the good 3-year-olds.
All right, so you talking about your 3-year-old?
Our 3-year-old, yes.
In the U.S.?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I suppose, you clearly got Forbidden Kingdom setting the clubhouse leader at the moment, haven't you? And then I guess we wait and see whether... Can Chad Brown get Jack Christopher out anytime soon?
He's inching forward, but it seems like the clock will strike midnight, too late for him, it seems.
Because he's a horse you're really longing to see, isn't he? I touched on those runs last year. I thought the Fountain of Youth winner was solid enough.
Yeah.
In all honesty, do you see him being able to do what Gunavera couldn't, and out of Florida Derby?
I've liked him from early on, and the issue that seems to be bubbling to the surface, Nick, that is kind of unusual considering how often we complain that there, since there's no sprinters really able to win their way into the Derby, it's kind of odd that we've had this run of front runners. When you talk, simplification and Epicenter and Kingdom and then Classic Causeway on Saturday. It's every week we've got another, near wire to wire, or not just near wire to wire. I mean, pretty much wire to wire winners. I mean, Simplification seems like the horse that is the most versatile, that has real speed. I think he acquits himself nicely, when you start figuring out how this thing might unfold.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with you. He doesn't look like a one-dimensional horse, does he? And that was the narrative going into Saturday, wasn't it? I mean, I didn't really fancy him much before the Fountain of Youth because I thought, there's going to be something with a bit more star quality that'll improve past him. But Todd's horse didn't do in the race what he looked like he might do in the paddock beforehand, and then of course we had the unfortunate incident that kind of robbed the race of another bit of its interest. So. Time will tell what he achieved, but he's a nice horse.
Well, we got the bigger, we got the mile and an eighth races, and let's see if that's a difference maker as well. When we add another half furlong to a lot of these, the wood is shaping up quite nicely, actually, and you got horses like that Morello. I forgot to even include him. There's a horse. We're going to see him go the mile and the eighth. So and it very well could be that. The people right now are feeling, like it's kind of a mundane bunch. But let's go a mile and an eighth, and we may have a whole different view of this when we get to the second week in April.
I'm sure we will have a significantly different view. I can't wait to see how it all unfolds and get back there. It is still just about the first Saturday in May, but it is late this year, isn't it? What is it, the 7th?
Yeah, as late as it can get, but it's still first Saturday. Nick, Cheltenham upon us. We'll be watching your feed and everything coming out tomorrow, starting in the morning. Always great. 3 Group 1s tomorrow, and there's always some surprises and prices. I appreciate it as always, and we'll catch up with you in a few weeks. Good luck and safe travels. Heading to Maidan.
Thanks a lot. Cheers, Steve.
Nick Luck, everybody, and there you go. There, you're all set. You should be set for your Cheltenham punting pleasure. Let me give you, as promised, all right? We got a couple of minutes here. Let me turn that off. Let me give you the details again from Kev, because between the delay from Singapore and and that distinctive brogue of Kev Humphreys, let me go back to the And I'll also send you links to Odds Checker. Remember, oddschecker.com. And you want the English. You want the UK. You know, click on the Union Jack. Don't acknowledge that you're in the U.S. Not that it's a problem, but when you won't have the same interface, you won't have the same information. If you want to check where the bookmakers are, what the bookies market is in all of these races. All right, so let's start with Tuesday. And Kev talked about the Supreme and 1:30. So that's a 9:30 start, 10:30, 11:30, 12:30, 1:30. Yeah, that would be the 9:30. That would be the opener. And in the Supreme, he and Nick Luck landed on that Constitution Hill. Constitution Hill. I do not have post positions in front of me. I've just got the market. Constitution Hill, all right, was Kev's and Nick's. They actually had an overlap in the Arkell, and this will be the 10 a.m., the 10:10 second race, the Arkell Novice, which, is, of course, is also a Group 1. Kev had interest in Cour Sublime, who is 14-1, and he and Nick both had an interest in Gabinaco, who is 20-1 in the market. And you know, Nick acknowledged that Edward Stone, you know, who's the market leader at 3-1, but they did overlap on the 20-1 shot, Gabinaco, and Kev is adding Cour Sublime Heart. In the Ultima, which is a handicap chase, and big bunch in here. And Kev respects Fleur, who is 9-1, basically sharing favoritism with Does He Know. They're both 9-1 in the marketplace. But the other horse that Kev wants to reach for, who's 18-1, is Ben Dundee. Not Mick Dundee, but Ben Dundee, 18-1. In the champion that Nick actually started with in his coverage, right now you're looking at very short, like 1-2 kind of a price on that Honeysuckle. If she were to falter, you're looking at Appreciate It, who is 9-2, and Tehupu. T-E-A-H-U-P-O-O. Tehupu, 10-1. Those were the two that that Kevin mentioned. And he actually thought that Saint Roy, 50-1, as a potential exotic booster. All right? That is in the champion, which goes at 10:30. All right. Also tomorrow, the Mayor's Hurdle. Kev made a strong case, one of his favorite each-way plays. And when he says each-way, basically means, you know, win place. The place can go down further. So any placement. Indefatigable is 28-1 in the Mayor's Hurdle. Okay, that's at 11:10. Tomorrow morning, the Boodles, a juvenile hurdle, and Kev has got a couple of, he acknowledged Gaelic Warrior at 5-2, but the prices that he was interested in, Prairie Dancer, I should say, 20-1, and Ebisari, 14-1, Ebasari. And a little Windstar advertising. You come back. All right, we'll get. I'm on till noon. All right. So you got a window. I'll save you the window. Elliot Walden will join us after I finish up with this. So Gaelic Warrior will be the favorite, 5-2, in the This is the 1150, the Boodles. But Prairie Dancer, 20-1, and Ibisari, 14-1. All right? So that's tomorrow. All right? So there you go. We can save the Wednesday stuff. Well, you know what? Let me quick, because there's only a few from Kev. In the Queen Mother on Wednesday, since you're taking all these notes, let's give you that. In the Queen's Mother, of course, and Nick acknowledged this, too, with Shishkin having to be well fancied, Energamine is that main competition that Nick talked about. But the horse that Kev thought at a price you could play with is Nube Negra, NubeNegra, Nube Negra, 12-1. All right. The top three in the market, Shishkin, Energamin, Shakun Pur Swa. All right. Then in that Coral Cup, as mentioned, with the crazy big field that could really, go a million different ways. Call Me Lord, 33-1. And Camprond was that difficult to hear horse, 11-1. And Nick Luck is giving you good risk at all, 8-1, all right? And then finally, in the 1650, which would be 1650 is the Johnny Henderson, Sky Pirate, 14-1, and Campusimix, 40-1, all right? You're in business. There's your. Have you been? That's a great question. This could be, this. I have no idea what the answer is going to be. Elliot Walden, have you gone to Cheltenham?
No. Actually, I have a long time ago.
You did go?
About 20 years ago. Yeah, I did. I wasn't there for the big day, though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
just toward the facility?
My wife's from the Cotswolds.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So I didn't know that.
She's from probably about, I think, an hour from there. So when we were over visiting her parents, we drove down to Cheltenham and looked around one day.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, because it's
is that today?
It starts tomorrow.
Starts tomorrow.
Tuesday,
okay.
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
There you go.
And it's a big hit. We've got well, Nick Luck, but we've got the long shot lad, Kev Humphreys, who every year finds a 70-1 shot. He does it at Ascot, too. But
pretty sharp.
Cheltenham is one of his tremendous spots. It's great to see you here. I think, in fact, 3 years ago we had a sit down. We got about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's many ways that we can approach this discussion, but let's talk about what's going on the racetrack first of all, because
sure.
you've got lots. I don't know. Did you see the picture I put up of Major General?
I did. I saw that.
He was down to his knees.
Yeah, he didn't handle things at all. Once he stumbled, he just. The dirt kicked back in his face, and I don't know if it's a combination of that or he's not handling a racetrack, but he did not run a jump, and he came out of it fine. So.
Well, that's much to me. When they do that, when I don't have to tell you. I mean, when they those extremities go ways they don't seem they're supposed to.
Yeah.
It's amazing, actually, that they then
jump up
themselves
and
back up. And,
I know.
But you know what? We're seeing all these babies being born, and you see those floppy legs, and
they jump up from a sitting down, too. You go by a stall and a foal jump up just from laying down with his knees underneath him. So that's what God made him, very athletic, that's for sure.
Unbelievable. Talk about your other, you've got a hat full of big three-year-olds.
Yeah, Emmanuel came out of his race good. He was awfully wide, and we're debating about whether to run him back either in the Bluegrass, the Florida Derby, or the Arkansas Derby. So, hopefully he was a little disappointing in the fact that he wasn't 1-2, but at the same time, think that there might have been a bit of an excuse. He ran 39 feet further, and he got kind of hit at the start and took out of his position a little bit at Gulfstream and then made a huge move 7 wide. He was wide all the way around. So we'll see. We'll see when he comes back. The jury's still out is the way I would put it. I wouldn't be convinced that he's on his way to Kentucky Derby, but I wouldn't be convinced he's not because he did run a very credible race to be fourth, running 39 feet further than the winner and 70 feet further than second and 30 feet further than third. So We'll see.
I sensed from Todd too that he was. He was not dissatisfied. Right. I mean, that it was not a terrible way to you
exactly.
know.
Exactly. He got battle-tested. So he hadn't gotten battle-tested. He had had things his own way in his first two starts. So, you know, for him to get battle-tested, now let's see how he responds.
Mo Donegal, I mean, I'm starting to realize that all these nice three-year-olds, and they've all had their own little hiccup along the way. And,
right.
And Mo Donegal ticketing for the Wood now, and the Wood is shaping up as a war.
Yeah, with Morello in there as well.
And High Oak is going to try to reestablish there, and I'm going to guess that Eddie Barker is going to take Ship-sational there, and so forth. In fact, Morello, early voting is waiting in the wings for Chad.
Yeah.
Mo Donegal, that Barese. In fact,
I think early voting might go to the Bluegrass. I'm not sure.
Is that now the ticket? All right.
I'm not sure about that.
Golden Code, Saffy Joseph apparently has got one. And Becky Thomas is excited about that Barese that she started,
right.
who's running in there as well. But how's Mo Donegal?
Well, we don't own him. That's Jerry Crawford.
Okay, but aren't you?
He's worked against us quite a few times at Todd's.
You don't have a piece of him?
Uh-uh.
Oh, I thought you guys were involved, too.
No, but, and then we have another horse named We the People who ran over
the
weekend.
Well, yesterday, yeah.
And he ran very well. We're excited about him. But, again, he's got to be battle-tested. So we'll see what happens when he runs against either the Arkansas Derby or the Bluegrass, I would say.
Well, and that, let me ask you a question about that horse, because the word was out. I mean, mm-hmm. It was more than word was out. Other trainers, this was the crazy, I don't know if you heard this story. Well, apparently in the paddock, Ron Moquette, Steve Asmussen, Brad Cox, they all had horses, and they were like, what do you think? What do we think? I just want to go see this monster. They all three acknowledged that they expected to be beaten by We the People.
You mean Saturday?
No, in the maiden race. Yeah, the maiden race.
Yeah. No, he has a big reputation, and Rudy has always liked him. We really liked him at the farm, and, you know, when I sent him to him, we said that I told Rudy that he was going to be the best horse we ever sent him. So we'll see. We'll see if it works out that way. But so far, so good.
Well, there you go. All right. And what else?
For him to keep, I might add.
Well, that's nice.
Because he's had life is good.
That's
true. And he justifies. So
that's true.
I'm not saying he's that. So I didn't mean that to him, but I meant for him to. He does a good job. And, you know, he rides them as well. And this horse is not easy. He's a little bit high strung. And I felt like he could really do a good job with getting him to settle down, and he has. He's really done well with him.
I know. I think stepped up 89 buyer. I think I saw from.
Yeah, I thought it would be a little higher than that, but I mean the Azari. I don't know what did they give the filly that won that.
She got a. I'll tell you right here. I got it.
Yeah, I love your tweets, by the way, with the buyer numbers.
Everybody's curious. Even the people that hate Andy and think that there's some nefariousness that Andy gives these numbers so that he can score on the next time.
I appreciate you doing it.
That's Rebel Week. That's no good. Now that's the that's the futures. Well, wait a minute. I know that I printed this baby out this morning at the hotel. This is one of the problems with me on the road for 5 weeks. I'm getting...
you got too much going on.
Yeah, and believe me, I try to...
Well, he would, you know...
Hold on, I got it right here.
Okay.
Here it comes. 92 for CC.
Okay. So he ran 6/100s slower. So I don't know how that equates to 3 points, but, you know, I think they were right at the same time. And I think for him to be in his second start and run that close to CC and She Dares the Devil is a really good race. They ran 43.55. I think he ran 43.63 or something
so,
like that.
So, yeah, that's well, he was early on the card, right?
He was early on the card, and he also, they went very slow early because he didn't want him to go on. So you know, he really finished strongly.
So, for the gallop out for a mile and an eighth down the road.
Yeah.
That's the way you got yours going.
So we're excited about him.
Well, let's talk about how exciting you know, some of the Windstar Stallions products are at the sale. You know, we could talk about the ones that are proven, but to me, the two-year-old in training season, it always gets fun when first crop, you know, when the rubber meets the road.
Yeah. And Good Samaritan's going to have a really good sale.
Nice.
The fastest quarter was 20-3, and that was by Hip 177 of Pickview, and he's been raving about that horse all year. Beautiful horse. I think his stock's breezed well. The Always Dreamings didn't breeze quite as well as the Good Samaritans, but we have some at the farm that we like a lot and are very athletic, so we're excited about him as well.
Well, there's two things at work, and actually I discussed this with Kip Elser earlier this morning and with Graham a little bit. It's March. I took a look at a couple of May foals. Yes. These horses aren't even two years old yet. And, you know, yet they're holding their own with horses that may have been born in January and February. It doesn't sound like much, but as a percentage of their life.
Absolutely. It's a big deal.
Right? And then you start folding in. When you think about Good Samaritan or Always Dreaming, I mean, you're talking about horses that needed a route of ground and got better as they got, you know, as they were.
Especially with Good Samaritan.
Yeah.
You know, Always Dreaming ran second, got beat ahead at Saratoga as a two-year-old, ran a 7 rag. So he ran a really good race with Dominic Schettino in his first start. Then he was moved to Todd. He had some shins come about or something. But, I think Always Dreaming was fast at any distance. But Good Samaritans definitely were two turn-type horses. And, you know, having said that, he was a good two-year-old. He won the summer at Woodbine on the grass.
That's true.
He was fourth in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. He won first time out at Saratoga. So, you know, there's some excitement there. And he won dirt and turf. So that to me is one of the things that's very exciting about it. But they're looking very good, very exciting for a cheaper stallion.
One thing I didn't ask either Kip or Graham, and I really should have, and it'll come up the next couple of days. What's your read, and how do you suggest potential buyers watch horses on the synthetic surface? And obviously, it's good, you know, helps protect the horses, and it's good for overall soundness. But at the same time, you know, you're making a judgment on a surface that, you know, maybe you're buying a horse to be a dirt, whatever, a dirt sprinter, middle distance, or classic.
Well, it's tough. I think some of it has to come down to pedigree. What did their mom and dad do? Did they run on the dirt, or did they run on the turf, or poly, or whatever? And I think some of it has to come down to their muscle shape. You know, do they look like a dirt horse, or do they look like poly track or turf horse? So I think you got to take all those things into consideration.
Well, a couple of other notes talks about this sale and about what's going on. You're getting some babies, some horses that we'll see soon enough. But you got some babies that are hitting the ground.
We've got Improbables that are hitting the ground, and Promises Fulfilled is another.
I was with Bob Barron and Dale at Gulfstream last week.
Yeah, what a horse he was. I mean, he was an amazing. Amazing horse, just super exciting. And global campaign in Tom's d'Etat. So we've got four really good stallion prospects in that are getting foals.
You know, when you say this, it's kind of a transitional situation right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, More Than Ready is just
sure.
He just gets runners.
Yeah, More Than Ready, Spitestown are a little old, and so we're waiting. You know, Constitution is doing outstanding.
He's terrific.
And we're trying to come up with another one. So it's exciting. I mean, those four, you could make a case for any of the four. Promise, Speed, Improbable being an unbelievable two-year-old, and then Older Horse Champion, and then Tom's d'Etat Love. I mean, he ran 1,000-plus buyer numbers. And then Global Campaign was a very good, fast curling. You know, a half to Bolt D'Oro, who Bolt D'Oro was lighting it up.
Yeah, seems like it, right?
Yeah, so Global Campaign's got a big chance, too.
Who's the sleeper out there, somebody that turned your head that you, doesn't have to be one of yours, but is it somebody?
You mean here?
Anywhere,
Bolt D'Oro's are doing
Bolt D'Oro's,
well.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
We bred him, and so he's close to our heart anyway.
There you go.
He's doing well.
There you go. Elliot Walden, always a pleasure to catch up. And kids are...
Life is good. Going to Dubai today.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
So he's on the plane here in about 3 hours.
All right. Well, safe travels.
Safe travels.
Exactly. Yeah. And more importantly, let's get him back and get the handicap season started. I tell you, I keep saying every weekend there's another four-year-old that emerges.
There's some nice four-year-olds.
It's going to be a good... It's going to be a very good season.
Yes, it is.
May have to carry the weight given... the uncertainty about these three-year-olds it's so unfair to judge them, because let them go a mile and an eighth and then you can start to really
they're starting
decide.
To sort themselves out.
Yeah, they'll be all right. Elliot, thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Always great. Elliot Walden, everybody, with a great wrap-up on the morning, and the 3 hours, as always, when we're at on site like this, flew by. It started with Brian Lynch and with Kip Elser. Then we had that reunion, Mig and Jason Blewett, Graham Motion, Kev Humphries and Nick Luck gave you your Cheltenham preview to get you ready for the Hoppers tomorrow, one of the great meets in the world, and Elliot Walden to round things out. Good luck if you're playing today on this Monday. Replay 6 to 9 here on Sirius XM. Later in a little bit, once Case gets the archive up and podcast, etc., back with you day one of the sale at OBS tomorrow. Hope you'll join us. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you in the morning.
You know, 30 years ago.
The Ponds Family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Nationally recognized for making stallions since 1933 and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading freshman sire, Mosler by Warfront, as well as Divining Rod, Frisian Fire, and Super 99. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the foaling barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to...
The PA Horse Breeders Association introduces the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Four brand new races to be run at parks for PA-sired, PA-bred two-year-olds. There are two $100,000 contests on August 22nd, PA Day at the Races. September 24th, PA Derby Day, has two more races, each with a $200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series. Yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit PABred.com.
Your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standard bred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 3-8-4-6-4-3.